back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Steven Talk Soccer podcast. This is episode 10 of my Steven's Footy Insight series. I am back again with my co-host, my brother Nari, back in the booth again.
What's up? Here again, here to stay.
Clearly, he's becoming an established member of this podcast. And if you guys are loving him, which obviously based on the interest and the volume of attraction and I guess the amount of attention the last episode with Nari got, this is definitely showing me you guys are big fans of his and that he should continue to stay on the podcast.
I appreciate all of y'all, man.
Yeah, you know, we're starting to get some fans from all across the world. I mentioned this last episode. I mentioned it again that clearly, you know, the people in India, shout out to you guys, the people in Germany, shout out to you guys.
Shout out Germany.
Shout out to people in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Miami, Florida. I hear you guys. I see you guys tuning in Jamaica too, in the UK. I see it. But this episode is going to be a bit of a longer one. So as I love to say, especially more recently, strap in, get ready, put the seatbelt on, turn off the lights. No, okay, we don't have to do that.
Yeah, you're going too far with it.
I'm just saying to get ready, yeah, because there's going to be a lot of content coming within the next 25, 30 minutes. So stay tuned and stay completely connected. Without any further ado, further introduction, there was a there were two big fixtures in the EFL Cup, the first of which meaning the tie is finished. The Chelsea versus Tottenham tie is now over. Chelsea now advanced to the EFL Cup final. Thomas Tuchel, who has an exceptional record in the semifinals, is actually a stat where he's participated in 9 different semifinals across his managerial career, and he's won every single final that he's been in, which is a ridiculous stat. And there's many more to come, but I'll bring that in later episodes when we talk about Chelsea in depth. But Chelsea won 1-0 in this fixture, a game that Nari was definitely disappointed by because he obviously wanted Tottenham to win, and he realized that Tottenham didn't win, and that really disappointed
him. You're doing it again. I thought you learned from the last episode. I'm not a Tottenham fan. I never had said that. I just appreciate the ball that they play from time to time. That's all I'm saying. But when it comes
to... We sound like broken records right now.
We do sound like a broken record. But in that fixture, I'm actually cheering for Chelsea, believe it or not.
Why? Why would you cheer for my... You always dislike the teams that I like and the players that I like and the...
That's true, but that's just because it's brother stuff, you know what I mean? But...
Nothing to do with, like, necessarily a direct affiliation with...
No, it has nothing to do with that. Like, you know, you were a big Hazard fan and I just despised them solely because you liked them. Mm-hmm. But end of the day, I still knew he was a quality player, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, carry on, though.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, the game finished 1-0. There was many controversial moments in this game, a lot of which came from the referee and not really from the players. Tottenham looked dejected and dead, as they did in the first leg, but Nari was trying to tell me that Tottenham actually deserved a bit more out of the game than a simple 1-0 loss. Nari, plead your case.
I have to say, I really feel as though they should have got at least one back. And the performance from Chelsea wasn't convincing in my books.
Agreed. I think complacency played a part in that, to be honest.
Complacency definitely played a part. I like how Lukaku had a nice moment. I think it was in the first half when he chested the ball down. His hold-up play is incredible. Like I think he's one of the best at holding up the ball that I've seen, if I'm being keeping it real. Like
he really
does a great job at it. Like once he has the ball at his feet, it's almost impossible to get it.
Exactly.
So I can really respect that. But the performance as a whole, once again from Chelsea, was very underwhelming.
Agreed. But for me, I feel like in football it's very difficult as a fan because sometimes you want the result and sometimes you want the performance, and most of the time you want both. But in my case, I was just focused on, obviously as a Chelsea fan, I just wanted Chelsea to go on to the final and to get to the final and see what would happen from there.
Sure, a win is a win, end of the day.
Exactly.
End of the day,
especially in a two-legged tie when you've already had a 2-0 lead from the first leg. I think that really, in my mind, I'm like, okay, the tie should basically be over. As long as you score the first goal in the second leg, as Chelsea did after an Antonio Rudiger, kind of a necker, as we call it, off the back of his neck.
I'm glad you really pointed that out because I'm never for players celebrating as though it's a 40-yard screamer when they have no idea how the ball went in the back of the net except for it hitting them in the back of their head.
I will. Like, I mean, this might be with my Chelsea tinted glasses on, but I will say that I do understand.
It is.
Okay. I do understand because the significance of the goal is a lot, especially given that Rudiger has a lot of his own issues with the club, but is clearly going on with a little bit of a, a dispute with the club in terms of his contract negotiations. Rudiger is now a free agent, basically. He can go to any club or sign a pre-contract and even leave right now to any club for free, I think. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think the goal means a lot for Chelsea fans. And it should mean a lot for him because you can see that he still cares a lot about, you know, performing well and putting up a good performance. Often when players are looking to leave a club and that they're currently at and they're kind of in contract negotiations that aren't really going the best, their performance is showing on the field. I've seen it many times. Look at Andreas Christensen, Chelsea's other centre-back, who played in this game as well. But you can see that when I watch Christensen, especially recently, he looks disinterested. And I think he's going to leave Chelsea fans, by the way. So be ready. I think Christensen's gone. He's gonzo. He's out of the club. No more Defenders FC. But back to Rudiger. Nari disrespecting Rudiger in his celebration. I like it because, you know, it's a London derby at the end of the day. It's a big deal for Chelsea fans. We want to batter Tottenham anytime we play them. As they said, Tottenham get battered everywhere they go. Everywhere they go. You see,
honestly,
so
man, it has a nice ring to it and it's not far off.
I mean, Expressions, Tottenham's correspondent, he proved my point. He said that he could have been on the pitch smoking a spliff at right back and put in a better performance than some of Tottenham's defenders. Gosh. Oh, man. But to say that Chelsea play Tottenham one more time this month in the Premier League, 2 weeks, I believe a week and a half, 2 weeks from now, at the Bridge again. And it should be a very tasty fixture, especially because Tottenham are definitely gonna want revenge after losing three times this season against us already. So we'll see how that goes. But Nari, do you have anything else you'd like to add to this game or to the overall fixture? Do you think Chelsea will win in the final? Do you still see them losing against Liverpool and Arsenal, which we'll discuss in a couple seconds?
I don't have much else to add to that topic, especially considering it's your team. So I don't want to batter them the way that I have in my mind. You know,
no,
I'm
go ahead, bro.
Polite and respectful. No, because there's a whole bunch of other teams that I'll unleash and I'll lash my wrath onto.
But, okay, hold on. I want to hear what you have to say about Chelsea, but I must mention the situation that happened between the various penalty appeals that were given and the penalty shouts that were given for Tottenham. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the one from Rudiger and Højbjerg, which happened outside the box and was given as a penalty and correctly ruled off by the VAR. So that one was definitely not a problem.
Yeah.
Rudiger, again, involved in the second offside decision, not penalty, because there was a penalty appeal again. That's another one that was given by referee Andre Mariner, who was basically trying to become the Don Corleone in the game. He was really trying to take over the headlines and become the star of the match and take over the attention, and that really bothered me. What do you think about referees in England becoming the main actors, or the main role of the game?
Yeah, it's completely preposterous. I'm obviously not in support of it at all, and it's very clear, especially as time goes on and as the game develops. They're just taking away the fundamental elements of what the game was founded upon, and I really dislike it. I strongly dislike it. I'm trying to be as polite about it as possible because I don't want to boil a whole bunch of bad wood on the place. You know what I mean? But you know what I mean, like,
okay, but your sentiment is definitely felt.
They're really interfering far too much, and it's this whole VAR, you know, business. I'm not in support of, to say the least, and that could be a whole other conversation. So
yes,
I'm going to leave
another podcast episode on its own discussing the officiating. Yeah. I think in different leagues, but especially the English standard, because I think in England, I say this to you all the time, off the mic, off the record. I always say that I don't really value the scorelines of every game or even the outcome of games often, because I think they're too many times are they dictated by the decisions done by the referee as opposed to what's actually happening on the field. In this case, I will say that the VAR got it correct, and every single decision that Mariner did make was rightly ruled off and rightly overturned.
Yeah.
Particularly the one that happened with Kane scoring a goal for Tottenham after a very bad mistake from Kepa Arrizabalaga, who's honestly been exceptional under Tuchel so far. Nari, what do you think about that situation with Kane? And do you think, or do you want me to explain? Or do you,
unfortunate for Kane. Unfortunate for Kane because I really like the fact that he's picked up a bit of form.
Mm.
Because I always have seen him as a quality player, and I know that he had went through a bit of a stint where he lost his confidence and he wasn't performing at the level that he has beforehand. So it's nice to see him getting on the score sheets quite often at this point again. But, I mean, this didn't count, so once again, unfortunate with it. But, yes, I would like you to speak further on that offside ruling because it was quite bizarre. It's not a case you often see. So, yeah, what exactly happened there?
Well, basically, according to many sources, and I'm assuming that these laws and refereeing ruling that I'm seeing is accurate, and I think it is, but it's essentially that the player, in this case, Harry Kane, must be level or behind the last two opponents, which in this case would be Kepa and Christensen. And given that he was ahead of both of them, he's considered offside. Rudiger, yeah, given his position on the field and the fact that he was in the goal and behind the goalkeeper, is considered null and void. It's the player that's closest, quote-unquote, or the second-last defender, and Rudiger would actually be the third-last defender in this case, which is why, or the last defender, and this is why he wasn't used as the ruling as to why Kane was onside or offside. It was Christensen that they used to decide whether Kane was onside or offside.
Very, very rare occurrence in the game. I haven't seen that in some years. I haven't seen that call be made, but it was the correct call at the end of the day, and let's be real, it's not like it was going to be Tottenham's day regardless. So,
and before I let you unleash hell on Chelsea, because I still want to hear what you have to say, even though you're trying to bottle up and trying to hide and shelter my emotions, don't worry about that. I want to hear the real deal. But I do think Tottenham weren't hard done by, but they were, but they weren't. I mean, for me, their performance wasn't good enough for them to go and win the tie completely and beat Chelsea and go to the finals, but definitely enough for them to score at least a goal, given how much pressure and how much opportunities they were able to create, especially in the second half. But, Nari, without any further ado, please give me your final analysis on Chelsea's performance in this game, and maybe even overall, because I know you have a lot to say. And then we'll switch a nice transition over to Liverpool-Arsenal, which is even more through the controversy.
Well, with that game in particular, I don't have much else to add than what you've already explained, because it was a pretty good performance overall. There were some leaks in the back in defense, which, for example, where that ruled off goal had come about. But as a whole, Chelsea, I just feel like they have their chest up a bit too high and their chins up a bit too high. Need to humble themselves a little bit, especially because towards this part of the season, they've kind of come on a bit of a digression in terms of performance. So I think they need to go back to their roots and, you know, dig deep into their champion mentality and, you know, play a quality game again, a confident game again, because it just seems as though they're riding the wave of their successes, and that doesn't get you very far. So that's my critique of Chelsea.
Fair enough. I don't think that your critique about the teams will be as detailed, which is kind of annoying, but we'll get on to that later.
I tried to tell you. I tried to warn you.
No, but I think that your critique when we get to the Liverpool-Arsenal game, which finished 0-0 in the first leg of their fixture, because Liverpool had 13 false positives, according to Jurgen Klopp, who was trying to scam and scheme the system, basically, and was able to do so as Liverpool were able to get the game postponed and played on the Thursday that it was played. The Thursday was played on yesterday, as Liverpool drew at home against a 10-man Arsenal side. Granit Xhaka back to his typical antics of getting sent off. Xhaka now has his fifth red card in the Arsenal colors.
I love it.
I absolutely hate it.
I think it's useless. If anybody knows me on the pitch or as a person, you definitely know I'm that type of player, because I like to get the job done. And
getting sent off is not getting the job
done. All the Arsenal, they got the point. They got the point.
There's no point gained here. All it is they didn't concede. It's not a league game.
This is true. But in theory, is what I'm getting at. They got the point. Yes. For morale, they got the point.
They got a victory, actually.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
A draw that looks like a win.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Anything that's not a loss for Arsenal is a dub.
Wow. I mean, their standards are literally underneath.
For now, at least. Listen, all Arsenal fans, relax. I know y'all stood up, sit back down, take a breath, go get some water. It's not that deep. I'm just saying what had to be said.
Okay, but to the game now, though. You're a fan of Xhaka's. For me, it's an outlandish tackle. It has to be a red. There's no debate.
It's crazy,
a red card.
But, you know, when he went for it, you could see his eyes were on the ball, man. He was really trying to get the ball.
It's not about whether the eyes are on the ball or not, but given his reputation, it's a reputation red card, but given his reputation of continuously getting sent off. That's
very
the fifth time,
point.
As we know.
Very good point.
And secondly, is the fact that, I know he wasn't the last man, but given how he raised his foot that high, like if he had made contact with the shin or maybe the ankle, I don't think they would have given the same verdict, or it wouldn't have been maybe would have been reviewed by VAR.
It's true.
But the fact that VAR didn't even look at it and said not, definitely referee on the onside decision by the ref is correct.
A lot of players, not to cut you off, but a lot of players, they don't seem to understand that you have a reputation, you know, like. You can't just go about doing antics and expect you're going to get the same type of calls as another player.
So
another person on the pitch doing that tackle, it could have easily just been a yellow card, especially considering it was outside of the box.
Yes.
Now, mind
and
you,
he wasn't the last
he
man.
He was the last man, though.
You think he's the last man? Maybe I'm blind or you're seeing properly.
When I had seen it, it looked as though he was the last man.
According to the Arsenal fan Twitter, yeah, you guys, you lot on Arsenal, you know, your Arsenal fans on Twitter love to say a whole nonsense and some logic too, but a lot of fraudulence in there. Let's not kid ourselves. I was told that Ben White was going to come over and rescue Xhaka, so Xhaka didn't need to get sent off. But overall, Xhaka made the right decision because Arsenal were able to hold out extremely well. I have to commend them and their defensive efforts. They looked very solid, especially from that point on and towards the end of the game. Liverpool definitely did their typical Liverpool business, especially late in the second half, which they often do when they're looking to obviously score. Because when you're playing in Anfield and Liverpool are playing at home, you always have this feeling and this sixth sense that Liverpool are going to find a way to break down the opposition and score at least one. And I was thinking they would score at least one in the game. This game didn't have any goals in it. There were some missed chances, none by none other than Nari's Japanese friend. I have
one word, Minamino. You know what it means.
Takumi Minamino, the Japanese international.
He really had no business shanking it to that degree. That was to the highest degree. Like he didn't just shank it. That was out of the stadium. May have hit a satellite. It may still be flying at this moment.
Okay, I feel like it's Ramos or Neymar's penalty miss. If you know. But,
oh yeah, those are bad. But yeah, no, those are really bad. This was a bad miss, and it's just because, you know, from experience, he bit at the chance. It was not composed in the slightest. He saw the goal in front of him; it was open, and he made a really bad attempt. And it happens to the best of us, happens to the best of them, happens to all the
greats. I was just going
to
mention that.
So I'm not really beating him up that bad, but it was a bad miss to say the least, and it would have had them the game. And, you know, these are the type of chances that Liverpool looks to always convert on. And this is how they win a lot of their games and have won a lot of their games, especially this season, those last-minute goals.
For me, that's not a sustainable...
It's not, as you can see, it's not. And that's why they tied a game in which I really feel as though they should have won.
And the thing is, the Liverpool fans were really saying how... They were... Oh, man, the Twitter spaces are ridiculous. If you guys don't listen to Twitter spaces, you have to. There's a guy named Husam who's a big Liverpool fan. And this guy was saying, oh, against Arsenal, side chick settings. It's side chick settings. We play against them at home, and we know what the result's going to be before the game starts. We treat them like our side chick. We have our wives in Manchester City and Chelsea, but when it comes to Arsenal, they're our brothers, they're our side chicks. We put them on side chick settings and put them to the side. And he said that Liverpool would be guaranteed to win by at least three goals, and they didn't even have three shots on target.
Damn. So
when I heard all of this in the spaces and on the social media, it told me that the narrative and the thinking by Liverpool fans was that they were going to batter Arsenal. And to be honest, had the game remained 11-11, the football would have been better, first of all. And secondly, I think the result of the game would have been much more entertaining and, I guess, more open and more high-scoring than it was. Yeah. Liverpool, like Nari just alluded to, had chances to score. And Minamino, who he's been a bit of a iffy player for Liverpool, not really, you know, reached the mark that they expected him to reach when they signed him from Salzburg. But that happens, as Nari was saying, obviously, you know, it happens to the best of us. Even the best players miss. So he shouldn't feel like, you know, the most horrific miss ever. We've seen this again. I'll give you guys a good story with Liverpool, actually. When Barca played Liverpool in the Champions League a couple of years ago and Liverpool won the Champions League that season, Ousmane Dembele missed in the first leg of that tie against Liverpool at the Camp Nou, which could have easily killed off the tie. It would have been 4-0 for Barca going to the Anfield. What happened? It was 3-0 instead of 4-0. Liverpool played Barca at Anfield. Of course, you guys know the rest is history. Liverpool fans probably sing about this game every day. But Wijnaldum and Origi coming up clutch and ending the game for Liverpool and sending them on to the final. So, or maybe it was the semifinal. I do not remember. But the result is the same. The point is that you have to score these opportunities because in the second leg, Nari, I want your prediction on this. Do you think Arsenal will be able to beat Liverpool at home in the second leg? Or do you think Liverpool will? I think Liverpool are going to win. I still think Liverpool will win this.
You're asking me if they're going to beat Arsenal at home?
Yeah, in the second leg of this tie.
It's going to be a tough match. I really like this fixture because Arsenal plays a very rigid game. They don't take a lot of chances when they play. They play very systematic, and it's exactly the counteracting tactic that Liverpool will have a hard time facing. It's because so Liverpool always beats teams on the counter.
Yes.
If you guys don't know that, now you know and you need to know. It's just about the counterattacks because they just blow past you. All the left and right backs become wing backs and they just fly up the flanks. Everybody, crazy I said flank, we're talking about footy, on the wings. But
make it sound like we're playing, talking about hockey.
Yeah, hockey. It's still NHL applicable. 07. It's still applicable.
It is.
It's applicable.
The logic is the same.
Yeah, but they just, you know, ultra attack for all the FIFA players. You know what that is. Attack as soon as, you know, you give up the ball in the mid. So with a team like Arsenal, I really see that they're going to have some difficulty, you know, combating the systematic tactics that they play. But I do give the edge once again to Liverpool, because Arsenal is just unfortunately not convincing for me. And I really feel like they just need a good nine. And
which they might be getting, by the way. So here's a little transfer update for you guys. Dusan Vlahovic, the striker for Fiorentina, who did score in a thrilling game between Fiorentina and Napoli in the Coppa Italia first round. A game I encourage you guys to go watch on highlights of. It was a cracking game of football. 9 men versus 10 men. It reminded me of high school football for me. But Dusan Vlahovic, who's been linked with Arsenal this entire January, and I think might actually end up at Arsenal. It wouldn't surprise me, because the players agreed terms, the clubs have agreed wages and all of the above. We'll see what happens. But I do agree with Nari that if Arsenal do sign Vlahovic or a striker like that, a profile like a number 9, things will change for them drastically.
Certainly. Drastic.
A number 9 and a midfielder, I'd say. A 6 and, yeah, and a 9.
Because they need some service. But those are the two elements, or if not just one element, that Arsenal is missing. They just need some goals. They have everything else. Everything else is very solid for Arsenal. They're actually quite a promising side at this point, in my books.
But I think because of their inexperience, they're not going to be as strong of a side until they get that.
For sure.
So the teams that they're competing with have that seasoned understanding of the game.
That's true.
When I watch Arsenal, I see a lot of juvenile thinking. And bad thing. They're young, but
they're an academy. It's an Arsenal academy. You know that.
But that's a problem. Arsenal of old were never an academy. They signed and played players that were coming into their prime or were currently in it when they got there.
They did, but it's a different game plan for Arsenal these days.
Clearly. Trust the process, as I say every time we mention this club.
Yeah. Put it that way. Just trust the process.
Exactly. But a nice transition coming up now. Speaking of missing midfielders, Thomas Partey in Ghana, the African Cup of Nations, and more coming up next. Excellent tournament. I mean, it's full of fraudulence, let's be honest. The referee in one of the games in the Tunisia versus some team, I forget which team now, but the referee in this game blew the final whistle at the 86th minute and then blew it again 3 minutes and 51 seconds later. So in the 89th minute and 51 seconds, the game hadn't even reached 90 minutes yet, and he blew the whistle for the final whistle for real that time again.
He was hungry, man.
He was hungry.
Just why are you beating him up, man? You need to eat. He skipped lunch that day.
So what's halftime for then?
You see, he had to do some paperwork.
Fill in the yellow cards and injuries and such.
It was paperwork, bro. It was a lot of paperwork.
He's talking to the fans.
Yeah, man. Signing autographs.
He's signing his standing jerseys.
Yeah,
referee
jerseys. Yeah.
Yeah, but just to say that, we see this is a trend we're seeing a lot in the African Cup of Nations. It's not a tournament I normally kept a very close eye on. Nari, have you watched this in the past?
I've only watched one fixture thus far. It just hasn't really piqued my interest. And whenever I have tuned in from time to time, the quality of the game is just it's subpar.
For me, when I compare it, what do you rank it when you put the Euros, the Copa America, and the African Cup of Nations? Where do you rank them from?
I think you have put it in the correct order by listing it out.
I agree. I think that is the best order. Yeah. I think we see the best quality of football and also a combination of, you know, real hunger and vigor.
I prefer the Copa America to the Euros, obviously, because of my Brazil affiliation.
Yeah.
Stamped, but
he's not Brazilian, by the way, but he loves Brazil.
It's not clear yet. We're still looking.
He's trying to file the paperwork for citizenship.
I still got some tests.
Yes, he's trying to get his green card.
Yeah, still got some tests to fulfill before we can, you know, conclude on that. But yeah, Copa America is my preference over the Euros, but I would say that Euros is definitely a more serious tournament, because in Copa America it's a lot of vigor, as you said. There's a lot of aggression, and sometimes it can just get a little too much out of hand, where the game is lost. It turns into a brawl.
Is it about playing footy. It's about being emotional.
Yes. And yeah. I can completely understand it, because if I was competing in that tournament, I would probably be doing the same thing.
Of course. But as a neutral, when you watch it, that's
easy. Yeah. As a supporter, it's not necessarily entertaining to watch at all times.
For sure. I guess on a more broader topic around the African Cup of Nations, I wanted to ask you about the game you and I both did see, which was Nigeria versus Egypt and Mohamed Salah. And I'm certain you saw the goal by Kelechi Iheanacho by Nigeria, which I thought was a really good
great goal.
Yeah.
Composure to a T, and well executed.
I think he's one of the most underrated players in the Premier League. Every time I watch Iheanacho, he looks very good.
Well, based on that goal, I haven't seen him play
quite often. Watch him. After this, you should see him, yeah.
I think I will. I think I have to at this point. But watching him, you know, take that strike, you could see he's a quality player. Mm-hmm. You could see it's not his first time in the box. Really good. You know that he's done that before. You know that he can seize the moment. And that is one of the things that I do like about this tournament, mm-hmm. is that a lot of these smaller players, they have a lot of heart. There's a lot of hunger. Something you don't really see in the Euros. The Euros is very much...
It's posh and prestige.
Yeah. Entitled football. But these guys,
it's not terrible, but I agree.
It's not, the quality is there, but...
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, but it's a different mentality.
Yeah. These guys are hungry. They want to be seen. They want to show out. They want to show the world, like, I'm worth something. I have something.
All this training and all of this dedication is not for nothing.
Not for nothing. And with that chance that he took so brilliantly, I have to applaud him. And I tip my hat off because he made it look so easy. And it's not an easy finish, to say the least. But, you know, props.
Agreed. But now to Egypt and Mohamed Salah.
Okay, now we're talking.
I want to discuss something really pertinent, Nari. I want to ask you. So what do you think about players... when they play, or do you think that there's a gap maybe in quality or maybe a lack of interest or maybe an increase in interest when a player plays for their club versus when they play for their country? And do you think it has something to do with systems? You look at Lionel Messi, who obviously...
Where is the increase of interest, within internationally or club?
I'm saying could be either or. We've seen situations where players play, they increase their interest and their attention to detail when they play with their club, and we've seen it lose, they see them lose it or maybe...
Yeah. Or gain it when they're playing with their...
It's vice versa for either situation. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly, if anybody has seen that game or has seen Salah, perform, because that's not even what he does.
Wow.
But
big shot.
When he steps foot onto the pitch wearing an Egypt kit, he doesn't look very interested. He doesn't look very inspired. Without even saying too much on this topic, because there's a whole other conversation I could have about Salah alone and all the comparisons that are being drawn that are completely
to the likes of Ronaldinho. And even in
don't
my opinion...
Don't even list them. It's ridiculous.
Okay, I won't go.
Yeah, it's actually...
That's the biggest one
crazy.
I've heard.
It's crazy. That's the craziest one.
I've heard Henri as well, Thierry Henry at Arsenal.
No, nah, man. That's wild. Like, who is writing these reviews? Six-year-olds, man? Like, what is this?
I don't think six-year-olds know how to write reviews, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
No, man. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, coming back to this game, nowhere to be found. And the thing about Salah is... And if you don't know, he's a system player. System player. If you're a system player, you cannot be one of the greatest ever.
Agreed.
You're a great player, but you cannot be one of the greatest players ever if you're a system player. And that is Salah to a T. System player.
Agreed.
So because there's no system that has been established in the Egyptian squad.
There isn't. They play free-for-all. A lot of what I saw in many of the games I watched, in pieces of the African Cup of Nations matches so far... You can tell there's a lack of tactical
awareness
and implementation by the managers.
Or initiative.
Initiative,
not,
exactly.
Yeah.
You don't see it.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't mean to cut you off. You were saying
no, you're right, you're right. But listen, it's Salah is not really doing anything for Egypt, and I don't think he plans to.
So you don't think Egypt will win the AFCON?
Not at all. If they're looking to Salah to save them? No.
Yeah, as basically like a messiah, like a, you know, kicking up and pray that he's going to be Salah? The one that's going to kill up.
No, man, it's not happening. It's not happening.
They look uninspiring. I know it's only been one game, and they're playing, I think, again, the next couple of days. But even for me, I don't need to see much of a team. And maybe that's a bit too naive or a bit too arrogant to think, oh, I need a small sample size. But
yeah.
I'm going to be honest, Nigeria, to me, even in that one game, showed me the most that I've seen out of them, Ghana. Cameroon
they
looked decent.
They Egypt. I'll tell you that. They outworked them. They were on their heels. The best player for Egypt, I haven't watched them enough to say this concretely, but it appears it's the keeper.
Yeah. He's an excellent goalkeeper. I don't even recall his name, and I probably would butcher
sure
it too.
It's El Shaarawy.
It's not El Shaarawy.
I swear.
It's not El Shaarawy. But anyways, yeah.
No,
yeah,
I swear. Not even on a joke thing.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. We'll look at that after. But the goalkeeper, nonetheless, yes. Even if his name is Stefan's grandfather, Stefan El Shaarawy. But that's not his first name, obviously. But Shaarawy is this common Egyptian surname. But the point is that the Egyptian keeper really did stand out to me as well. And I think in AFCON, we see a lot. That's probably where we see the best of goalkeepers. I think they have a lot of different skills than we see in European keepers and even in South American ones. For me, when I look at the African keepers, you know, whether from Egypt or whether they're from Botswana or Mauritania, anywhere, there's a really a very distinct quality that they have that other keepers don't have. I don't know what hunger. It is, but hunger. Their reflexes are on a different level. It's something incredible to me.
It's hunger. They want it more, man. They simply want it more, and I can't even imagine. Well, I don't have to say that the conditions are so poor, but they're definitely not up there with the likes of the European squads.
100% of the investment and the level.
And the interest, especially for the keeper role, because at the end of the day, most people are just saying, just keep the ball out of the net, okay? Just, like, we're not even really going to focus on that because we're not even trying to get the ball to you.
Another episode suggestion where you talk about the modernization of positions, specifically the goalkeeping position, because yeah. I do agree with you that fundamentally, most teams, especially when you're in a lower division, mm-hmm. you're a weaker side like the Norwiches, which we'll discuss when we come to the Premier League predictions. When you look at these teams, their main goal for the keeper is obviously not to concede. But I think you look at Ederson, a keeper I know you are a big fan of, and Alisson.
That's my guy.
Yeah.
Alisson less. I like Ederson the most.
I like Ederson more, too. Yeah. I think both of them are great.
Great keepers, though.
Yeah. I think Ederson's better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But Alisson's been great as well, as you just mentioned. But just to say that they definitely modernized the way the game is changing in that sense, and the way you have to be a bit more technical and a bit more adept using your feet.
Yeah.
And that obviously has changed the way that we look at the game and how keepers are not just asked to keep the ball out of the net.
Can we just have a moment to acknowledge Ederson's passing? His distribution? Can we just have a moment, please?
It's something spectacular.
It's actually incredible. Like,
It's incredible, but it's not surprising given where he's from. Because I think Brazilians typically do this, where they kind of... There's many Brazilians that have played over the last 50, 60 years. I obviously wasn't alive for that long, but I can name some that have altered the way the game of football is played. One of which is obviously Ronaldo Nazario. Right. And next one I would say, which is his son, as they call him, would be Ronaldinho, in my opinion.
True.
You probably would disagree with this, but I think Neymar is the next one, kind of like that as well.
He is the next one up, but I'll end it there because we could go on about Brazil, so... But
and then last one I'd say was Vinicius Jr. in modern day time. And Vinicius Jr. is killing it again. Big win for Madrid against Barca. El Clasico Super Copa semifinal. Yeah. Vinicius Jr. is on fire. He's on smoke right now.
Much respect.
But anyways, back to the AFCON. And just to say the keepers in the AFCON are something I'll be looking out for. Not necessarily just the football, which as Nari had mentioned, is not necessarily the same, not level per se, but different type of football than what we see when we watch the Euros or the Copas. Mm. But I must ask you before we transition sweetly into the Premier League and what we think each team is going to do in terms of their fixtures this match day.
Right.
What is your early prediction for the AFCON? Do you think Nigeria will win? Do you think Ghana will win? Egypt,
Egypt is not winning.
Slandered them.
Once again,
they're their host nation.
They're always a good team. Cameroon always has a good
Algeria.
Side. Cameroon has a good side. Algeria always has pacey players, yes. I find.
Look at Riyad Mahrez and the like.
If I'm just going on a whim, this is simply on a whim, I'm going to go with Ghana. Very strong country.
Not Ivory Coast either?
No Drogba.
No Drogba, no party. Yeah. Actually, I don't even think Drogba won the African Cup of Nations, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think he did either.
Yeah, but I agree with you. You need a player like that, which they don't have in the team. I think they can go far. That's the team I want to win. I hope that my prediction is I actually want Ivory Coast to win this.
That would be nice to see as well. I wouldn't be mad if Ivory Coast won. I'll just be upset if Egypt wins. Although, I'm a huge fan of Egypt as a country. But
yeah, but in terms of the footballing team. Yeah.
And fun fact, actually, I can't remember the exact year, but... Mm-hmm. When I was playing soccer at around the age of 11 or 12 for the quote-unquote World Cup that we had within our province here in Canada.
The capital.
crazy to say. Anyway, point being, my team was Egypt.
Yeah, I remember that. And my team was New Zealand. But I mean, I didn't really, I got no PT, so I wasn't saying too much. But we move on.
To the Premier League, match day 22 next.
To the Premier League and to the Premier League predictions, and the first of which is between Aston Villa. Actually, no, the first game in terms of time order is Manchester City versus Chelsea. So we'll start with that and then we'll move on from there. It's the big game of the weekend, the one that I'm not really looking forward to watching, if I'm being very honest. I don't like watching Chelsea play in big games. It always bothers me. I think the anxiety and the stress is it's unrivaled for me, especially because of how much nonsense Chelsea fans talk before games, and they often make the narrative bigger than it needs to be. And therefore, these kind of games bring more pressure than they should because nobody said anything. We just watched the football for what it was. And obviously, modern-day football fans don't do that. But if we did do that, I wouldn't be thinking, oh, we need to win. Like, obviously, I want us to win, but it's football. I can't control the result. But I think now with this, like, the narrative, Chelsea are going to beat them, revenge from Champions League, and, you know, not Champions League, but from previous games in the season, things need to change. So what do you think in terms of the score prediction for this game?
Score prediction for this game, I have Man City coming out as the victor. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be a close game because these are two sides that know what's at stake. And more than anything, it's about pride. So neither team is going to want to lose this. And I know that Chelsea has come, they're coming back up with a bit more form.
Nah, just say what you want to say. We know you don't like my club.
Listen, it is what it is. Nah, man, don't even go there.
For you, this is how it goes. You pick Palace, Millwall,
we're going to have to take Brentford, this off the pod, man. This game too serious.
Fulham, Arsenal, Tottenham, and then Chelsea at the bottom of the list.
No, I don't think that at all, man.
And it's probably more Crystal Palace, West Ham. There's more London clubs.
How are you going to put Crystal Palace so low when you know that's my team?
No. I'm just naming, no particular order. Just to say that Chelsea, whatever order it is, Chelsea are at the bottom of that totem pole.
All right. Well, let me not be facetious here, but
no, I'm just joking. I'm only saying because I'm trying to protect my club. That's the only reason why I'm being so defensive right now.
Right.
But now I hear you. So you think City will win the game, don't you?
I think City will win the game. It's going to be a close game. Mm-hmm. I have the scoreline probably at about 2-1. City. For Man City?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see Chelsea scoring first, believe it or not. I see Chelsea scoring first because I feel like what's going to happen is they're going to come out and rise to the occasion, but they're going to dwindle.
Yes,
and
I can see that happening.
And because with all the counters, once again, from City, this is the thing I've noticed with a lot of the English teams. They have a really hard time managing these counterattacks because everybody is so focused on going forward.
And not trying to lose possession.
So they don't really look at, like, wait a minute, how many players do we have in their half? And then before you know it, one mistake, that's a mistake, and then boom.
So it's game over.
Game.
Yeah.
So that's the scoreline I have, 2-1 Man City.
Okay, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. So that's just very tame. I'm not going to do any explanation. I'm really hoping it ends as a... Honestly, I'd much prefer... this is the one time in life that I'm perfectly okay with the fact that it will end with the spoils being shared. But we move on to Aston Villa versus Man United, which is another big game happening at Villa Park. These two teams played earlier in the past week in the FA Cup, where United won, I mean, a bit luckily against Villa. Nari, what's your prediction for this game, Aston Villa United? I went 2-1 to Aston Villa. I think you agreed with that.
2-1 for Villa sounds about right to me. My guy Coutinho warming up.
Yes, this will be his debut for Aston Villa, back in the Premier League again.
Back in the Prem, for the first time in a while. Shut it down. I don't think you guys are ready for what's going to happen, and watch him do nothing. But
honestly, I was thinking, you might be digging him up, and like many people are saying, we can do so well.
Yeah,
we're
gonna that's usually how it goes. Minutes. We talk so highly, and then they disappoint. But in all seriousness, it may not be this game, but in all seriousness, quality player. If you don't know about Coutinho and if you've never heard of him or you don't know enough about him, I highly recommend watching his highlights and more specifically, watch him kick the ball. Free kicks, shots, just look at those compilation
He's
of those.
He's so small, but he generates so much power.
He hits the ball crazily. That's just, let's say it like that.
The best adjective.
But I do think 2-1 for Villa is the scoreline.
You don't think
well.
United will win the game, do you?
I don't see... It's hard for me to say United is going to win a game. It's kind of on a whim because I, too, I'm just as surprised as them when they step into the pitch. Like, I feel like everybody's on the level playing field when the game starts.
So true. It's almost as if they're treating themselves like underdogs, which makes no sense given the stature of the club and how much success they've had in the Premier League over the last 25 years.
It just... There doesn't seem to be any conviction within that team. I see Ronaldo, you know, at the forefront. He's the man himself, so he's trying to push. But they don't really... Nobody else is really following suit. And you have Rashford, who people were looking at a lot in the past years with United. And I just feel as though something has happened with Ronaldo stepping foot into the club. He's like a little bit uncomfortable or envious, I feel like.
Of his legacy.
Yeah. I feel like there's a bit of that element to it.
I honestly believe that once Ronaldo leaves United will become better.
It could very well be that way, which is
weird to say.
Quite the dichotomy, because it's like the same thing that's giving you the success now.
It's taking it away,
but that's kind of how it works in life sometimes, man. Sometimes the best things, you have to let it go, man. Yeah. You know that, girl.
Okay, why are you doing that? Why are we getting to our Marvin's room?
No, nah, listen, bro.
You know that girl. It gets talking like a late night talk show. Yeah. You know that girl.
It gets deep.
What is this,
man? It gets deep.
What is this, Valentine's Day?
No, because I know that hit a couple chords for some people. If they weren't listening, now they're listening.
Definitely,
you know what I'm saying?
Bro. The tissues are next to them right now.
Who? Definitely. Like, how you know? Exactly.
Okay, let's move on, though. Let's just kind of rip through this. Liverpool versus Brentford. I went for a 3-1 Liverpool win, even though they played terribly against Arsenal. I think they'll bounce back in this game, especially because they're playing at home and Brentford have been
3-1 poor. 3-1 for Liverpool, you're saying?
What's your prediction for the game?
I can see that. I can see 3-1. I don't think that Liverpool's going to score as many goals as they have been recently. They're really...
Stifled.
Yeah, they're definitely stifled. Salah is...
He won't be playing. He's in, obviously.
This is correct. Yeah. Okay. If that's the case, then I have
no Salah, no party, as they say.
Yeah. I have a 2-0.
Liverpool.
2-0 Liverpool.
Okay. Arsenal versus Tottenham. This game might be postponed due to Arsenal's inability to name a proper lineup. I mean, that's no disrespect, but that's literally what Arteta and Arsenal said. But so the game may not actually happen. But let's just give a prediction for when it does. I'm gonna go for a 2-2 draw. Nari, what's your prediction for this game?
For this game, that sounds about right to me, but I might go for 1-1. I think it'll be a low-scoring game.
You're not going
to
back the Gunners?
No, just like United, I don't see United or Arsenal being a team that really is going to put their foot down into a game.
They don't do that.
It kind of happens or it doesn't happen.
And if it does, it happens in spells.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I do see a draw being the outcome. Yeah, 1-1.
Exactly, I agree. I think that's a scoreline that tells you that the game, they're going to cancel each other out, which I think is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They have both been on poor form recently. And I know Arsenal got a draw victory, as we mentioned earlier, but for me, it's not enough to say I think they're going to go to Tottenham and win. I think Tottenham will be angered, will be heavily the memory of getting battered at the Emirates Stadium earlier in the season will definitely live fresh in their minds. But we move on to Wolves versus Southampton. I've gone for a 2-1 Southampton win.
I'm going for the exact opposite, for 2-1 Wolves.
Okay.
The Wolves are a sleeper team.
Okay.
They have a couple players. I don't know his name, but...
Who is striker?
Who is... I think he may be Korean, if I'm not mistaken.
Wang Yi-chan?
Yeah.
He's injured, but he's very good.
Yeah, yeah. Is he Korean?
Yes, he is Korean.
Okay, see, I want to make sure I got that right, because I'm not that guy.
Mm.
But, he's a quality player. I really like his work ethic. He really works hard.
He does.
And he seems like a very humble and genuine person, so I like him. Chiraore? Sorry, guys. Yeah. Sorry I even said that. Yeah. But, 2-1 Wolves.
2-1. Okay, fair. Newcastle versus Watford.
Newcastle.
I went for a 2-1 Watford win, which is a shock to me because I do not remember writing that down, but I did. So
yeah, you must be smoking something.
Yeah, smoking bush. I'm smoking whatever expression you were smoking.
Yeah, man. For real. No, that's a crazy scoreline to say. I have Newcastle for sure. I have Newcastle 2-0.
Okay. And the final game is Norwich versus Everton, which I have Everton winning comfortably 2-0 away from home at the Carrow Road.
I have Norwich with 1. I'm going to go for
4-1 Everton. 6-1 Everton. Dominic Calvert-Lewin hat-trick.
I'm going to go with a 3-1
Richie,
Everton.
Richie coming big.
Yeah, Richie will come back. I know he wants a vengeance for... They've been robbing him of that hat trick. If you know, the most recent is a couple of weeks ago.
He still took the match ball home though against Arsenal.
You know, rightfully so. But that was completely preposterous, man. That was so wrong, man.
Fraudulence. English refereeing fraudulence at its finest. Part of the reason why I think the game tomorrow morning between Chelsea and City is going to be a wipe off, because I know whoever refereed the game is going to want to be the main character. We're going to want to be the Batman, which tells me the game's going to be useless. Because whenever this happens, we don't watch football. We watch VAR. It's because
we need to speak to that. Let us know if you want us to speak more to the referees in the game today, and you know, the new wave and generation of goalkeeping and how it's evolved from what it once was.
Because 100%.
There's a lot to be said about that. Those two topics, primarily the former, which is referees, and in England specifically, it's
fraudulent, man. The fraudulence. But as always, thank you guys for tuning in. A bit of a longer episode. Let me know if you enjoyed that. I thought this was a really thorough and well-detailed or thoroughly explained episode. I will be back as always to give you guys my review of all these fixtures and all these topics that Nari and I discussed today. Thank you guys for listening, and I will be back. very, very soon in the near future.
Take care, y'all.
Hey, everyone. Are you enjoying the content? Please be sure to leave a rating and a review and to check out my other episodes. If you're looking for more Steven Talks Soccer content, you can find me at STSPod on Instagram, at StevoTalksFooty on Twitter, and at Steven Talks Soccer on TikTok. Become a consistent starter in the STS squad.